Hey, it's me, your physical trainer. Just letting you know that before you go on a run, you should make sure that you stretch, hydrate, and cue up an episode of this podcast. Before I continue my first ever journey through the Harry Potter series, just a few quick announcements. First, you may be seeing, on the internet, some opportunities to buy tickets to see Potterless in a city near you. Well, that was going to be the plan. I was going to do a tour of the Eastern and Central United States in June. Unfortunately, this happened, and that's been postponed. But some ticket websites are still posting it, so here's just a warning. Don't buy those, because those shows won't happen, and I want to make sure that you guys don't get stuck with some weird fees. We will be having this tour whenever touring is feasible again. I'll be sure to provide updates on the show and social media as well whenever we can make that happen. On an unfortunately similar note, the merchandise store has been paused for the time being. Our merchandise distributor is based out of
Montana,
and Montana has shut down non-essential businesses like a lot of cities are doing, and our merchandise partner's warehouse falls under that. So they filled out all the orders through Friday, March 27th. Other orders are being put on pause. So I'm sorry about that, but we have to keep people safe, so it makes sense. I will be continuing to send out Patreon merch, though. I've sent out a bunch of shirts recently, but I will have to put that on pause for a little bit, but I can safely send out stickers for the next who knows how long, so I'll be getting on that. If you're a patron and you have questions about Patreon merch, feel free to shoot me an email, potterlesspodcast@gmail.com. I'm happy to talk it through. And speaking of Patreon, but on a happier note, we have new patrons to welcome to the team, so shout out to Kelly Booz, Danny Lisbeth, Minky Dreesen, Stephanie Carrillo, Kate Davis, Rox Sarah, Abigail Whitehouse, Ilaria Vizentin, Marisa Mora Zapata, Sarah Luna Rose, Katerina Kobzova, Sarah Murray, Brooke Harris, Kirsten Koenigbauer, Anne Katrin Ruspiller, Anna Violetta So, Joyce Thyssen, and a happy birthday wish to Alex Consulver. A name correction for Laura Hetz, a producer correction for two people whose names I was failing to say, Char Char Binks and Natanya Page. Shout out to Landon Schwausch and Kendra Hertz, who upgraded to the producer level status, as well as our new producer level patrons, Yokan Shadley, Darcy Alexandra Harrison, and Elite Rave. They joined the ranks of Vicky Aaron Clow, Marchismo, Samantha Juan, Rose Marie, Maria Romina, Audra Eleanor, Nikita Ali, Amelia Sarah, Ben, Rachel Zachary, Orchid Vivian, Haley, Mr. Alex, John, Noel, Liz, Brandon, Claire, Rory, Veronica, Lotta, Noah, Tracy, Colleen, Jennifer, Friday, Ivor, Summer, Andrea, Justin, Jacob, Maya, Mark, Polly, Zena, Harlan, Noelia, Addy, Nikki, Kine, Amanda, Alicia, Kafir, Sarah, Marta, Eileen, Keegan, Mr. Folk, Maya, Floor, Siri, Georgia, Skyla, Adele, Professor, Threat, Ellie, Elizabeth, Michael, Tiffany, Kelly, Carrie, Connie, Jen, Nedry, Will, Samantha, Aurora, Marcus, Courtney, Marik, Ashton, Brittany, Phelan, Julie, The Meadows Family, Ginny, Brianna, McKenna, Heather, Brad, Thomas, Brianna, Kevin, Lori, Chrissy, Jarl, Haley, Ashley, Peta, Sophie, Jenna, Nicole, Callahan, Kylo, Leah, Melissa, Bella, Melanie, Bill, Victoria, Elizabeth, Britt, Becca, Reese, Adam, Joseph, Lily's mom, T-Run, Madison, Kyle, Tonks, GK, Sabrina, Sophia, Farzan, Melanie, David, Maria, Matt, Okamahime, Yimki, Bony Pony, Jacob, Kelsey, Taco, Blowfish, Rike, Taylor, Rochelle, Megan, Alicia, Riley, Colleen, Steen, Laurel, Rossanne, Erica, Miranda, Steamed Nuggets, and Can't I Potter? Who never dropped food on their lap immediately after it was given to them on a plate. If you want to be like one of these amazing patrons and get access to bonus episodes, the most recent bonus episode was the audio from the live show we had in LA in February. There's also director's commentary and exclusive merchandise that I mentioned earlier, and live streams and more. You can head on over to patreon.com/potterless. We're also doing a very special Discord trivia night on April 1st. It is Potterless trivia, so not Harry Potter trivia. All the questions are about me and the podcast. If you are a $2 and above patron, you get access to the Discord and you can participate. All of that fun bonus content lives at patreon.com/potterless. But without further ado, let's get into episode 119 of Potterless, covering deleted scenes from movies 5 and 6, guest starring Emily McGovern, the creator of My Life as a Background Slytherin. And welcome back to another episode of Potterless, the tale of a grown man who didn't read the Harry Potter series as a kid. He read them as an adult. He watched the movies, and now he's doing stuff about things beyond the standard movies. My name is Mike Schubert. I am that grown man, and I'm here joined today by a lovely human being. You may know her as being the person behind the Instagram account Emily's Cartoons, which features the webcomic My Life as a Background Slytherin. It's Emily McGovern. Emily, how's it going?
Hello. I'm all right. Very well, thanks. How are you, Mike?
I'm doing very well. All things considered, that I haven't left my apartment for anything besides going on a run and getting food.
I mean, there is that. There is the global pandemic aside. Things are going well. Yeah.
Yeah. Aside from the world like slowly crumbling around us, things are great.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Time for a podcast, man.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, hey, people out there are bored and stuck in their apartments and podcasting.
They need content.
If anything, the two of us are really just doing a good civil service to the
public
world.
Service. We're frontline, Mike. Frontline workers here.
I think people really ought to just be thanking us for all of the good we're doing in this world by creating podcasts and cartoons for people to consume while they're bored. I mean, in these trying times, who else can we turn to except for podcasters and illustrators?
Yeah, you're welcome, guys. You're welcome.
So we are here to discuss the deleted scenes for the final four Harry Potter films. And before we get into that, I would like to just get a sense of your Harry Potter fandom. Obviously, you have an appreciation for background characters in the Harry Potter universe. Before we started recording, you said you appreciated that I did a whole episode about non-essential characters and stuff like that. So as far as your Harry Potter fandom, like, where does that all fit in? What led you to make the cartoons, etc.?
So the comic started about 3 or 4 years ago. Yeah, it's called My Life as a Background Slytherin. So I just put myself in the background of various famous scenes and tried to show them from a Slytherin perspective, which I think came out of talking to a friend of mine, and she asked what house I'd be in. And I was saying I'd be a Slytherin, but I'd be one of those kind of like really cowardly Slytherins who, you know, like 20 years after the Battle of Hogwarts, when their kid was like, so what were you doing then? I'd be like, I don't remember. Like, hard to say. And she thought that was funny. And so I started to make a comic about it. But so for the comic, more or less, the books are canon. Mm-hmm. Because I'm actually not that familiar with the films. I have probably seen them all in bits and pieces just from living in, you know, civilization.
Sure.
But I am not like beat for beat familiar with them in the way that I am more so with the books, and that I know that the fandom generally is. Because at one point everyone was talking about this scene where McGonagall teaches the Gryffindors to dance, and I was like, how did I miss that? Yeah, it's a it's a movie.
Don't worry, the movies are generally rubbish, to put it in a term that you could understand.
Oh really? You would go that far? I was wondering whether we were gonna be coming down on the sides of like judgment artistically, because do people not mind when you're like, the movies are rubbish?
No, I think for the most part, people are okay that I dislike the movies because they leave out a lot of things, as these deleted scenes episodes have shown. They tend to just leave out things that help with the plot and show emotion right. And all of that. And I guess as we will cover these deleted scenes, I'm sure you, not being very familiar with the movies, were probably wondering, why wasn't this in there?
Yeah. Some of them, yeah, definitely.
I think we should get right into them.
Yeah, do.
So again, for anyone listening at home, I'll put the link to the YouTube video that we watched that is a supercut of all the deleted scenes if you want to watch these and get up to speed. We're going to begin with the fifth movie, Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. And the first deleted scene here baffled me to no end.
Oh, it's an incredible like way to kick off this podcast, because it is just, I mean, on the one hand, I understand why it was cut out. But on the other hand, it's kind of, you know, poetic cinema. It's incredible.
It is captivating. So this first scene is Trelawney just strangely eating her food while Umbridge is announced as the Defense Against the Dark Arts professor and then starts to give her speech. And I would assume that this big clip was not meant to be shown in the film all in one continuous go, because it is about a minute and a half of her eating food in a strange way.
It's very long, very long. Yeah. Is that Flitwick right at the beginning?
Yes.
The one played by Warren Davis, is that right?
Warwick Davis, yes.
Warwick Davis, yeah, okay, got it. Did he not undergo like a massive stylistic change?
Because
I seem to remember him looking very different in one of the movies.
Yeah, in the first movie, they make him look really old and haggard and have a really big beard and weird hair. And then starting the second movie, they decided, you know what? Or maybe it's the third movie. Maybe it's when Alfonso Cuarón steps in. They go, actually, let's make this guy look better and not so decrepit. I think it was a good decision, because Homie looks rough in the first movie.
But also, this is the point where they decided that Hermione will be like spiritually frizzy, not like physically so.
Yeah.
Which I think there's a number of things that made me not want to watch the movie when I was a teenager. And I think as a frizzy teen, I was like particularly annoyed about the fact that they just sort of, for the first movie, they kind of crimped her hair a bit. And then afterwards they were like, well, you get the idea. She's a frizzy nerd. We don't really have to actually physically make her hair frizzy. It's, you know, context.
You know, we really need justice for frizzy hair people.
Honestly.
The discrimination against bringing in all different people of all different walks of life into the Harry Potter series is no secret, but not enough people are talking about the lack of representation of frizzy haired people.
Frizz representation is needed. It was, a bad call in my opinion.
Yeah, so the scene is just Emma Thompson as Trelawney strangely eating the food. Here's what she ends up doing. She takes like a bowl of what looks like whipped cream.
Yeah.
And she just like puts it on the table a couple times.
I thought she was going to do some sort of divination thing with that, actually. No. I thought this was like the beginning of her like doing some tea leaf, but via whipped cream related thing. But no, she's just putting whipped cream on the table for some reason.
So yeah, she just puts whipped cream on the table. Then she puts a scoop of it into her drink, which is a choice. She then scoops her food onto her lap. And yeah. Then her hands get all messy with the food. So then she washes her hands in her whipped cream filled drink. It was very interesting.
It's kind of pleasing in a kind of slapstick way, I guess. It goes on for an incredibly long time.
Right.
One thing, who is on her right? Who is this like sleek, kind of no-nonsense looking witch? Do we know?
So they don't say. They show two teachers because the shot is a pan shot starting with Flewick. Then you pass a older black man who, of course, we have to get rid of representation in these films. So he can't be in the movie.
Does he not pop up again?
No, he doesn't. At least to my knowledge, he doesn't. Maybe he's in the very background of something, but he's never shown prominently in the films. But he wasn't white, so why would we put him in?
Right.
And then the person next to him, I'm not sure who it is. It could be Professor Vector, who is the arithmancy teacher that we never really get to see anything about in the books or the movies.
Oh, that's a great name, isn't it? Professor Vector.
Septima Vector. She's fantastic.
I mean, she's doing a great job. Great background work. Mm-hmm. Love it. 10 out of 10.
Yeah, she's very serious and stern looking, but then every now and then when Trelawney does something especially strange with her food, she turns to the right and gives a disapproving look. It was masterful work.
But not overplaying it either. Very casual. Not like extra, this is my like big star moment. This is when the director's going to see that I have talent. Just very cool, very calm. Yeah, love it. Brilliant work.
I can understand why it was cut because I don't get what it was supposed to achieve except for Trelawney having a bad omen about Umbridge since later on they have a run-in together and stuff. But yeah, I could see why it didn't make the cut.
Is it just like Emma Thompson having a whale of a time and they couldn't bring themselves to, you know, to cut away basically? I think that's what it was.
Regardless, I'm glad that for the deleted scene, they kept the entire thing intact and showed us just 2 minutes of Emma Thompson having a blast with the prop food.
So do we think that your audience, like the people listening, are going to be really familiar with these because they'll be like extended cut fans? Because I, for example, I'm a Lord of the Rings extended cut fan. And I know that we are Legion, but I don't know about the Harry Potter movies. Is like the extended cut more popular?
So I don't think there is as stark of a distinction between director's cut and not director's cut like there is with Lord of the Rings, because I feel like the Lord of the Rings director's cut stuff is entire side plots cut out. Whereas
completely.
All these deleted scenes are just like, oh, here's 10 seconds that make the entire plot of the second movie make more sense, but we cut them because, you know, we just had to.
Do you want like another 5 seconds of Harry staring pensively into the distance? Sure. We've got you covered.
So I don't think that there's as big of a thing, but I do think there is a chance that I have seen some director's cut versions of the movies, because when I was watching them in preparation for the episodes I did about the movies, I very legally watched them on very legal websites online.
Sure.
And some of the scenes I talked about, some people reached out either on Twitter or Instagram or email and said that, oh, that's actually a deleted scene, so you might have had an extended cut version.
Right.
So I may have seen some by accident, but yeah, I don't think there's as clear, at least to my knowledge, I don't think there's as clear of a, like, this is the director's extended cut, this is not. But I do know a lot of people are pretty familiar with the deleted scenes because in the movie episodes often I was like, why wasn't this in the movie? And then people would reach out and be like, don't worry, it was a deleted scene, which doesn't make me feel any better because it's like they still decided not to put it in the movie. It's almost worse if they went through the effort of filming it and then decided, we don't need this.
Well, this one, at least we've got context now. Trelawney, she doesn't know how to eat.
Nope.
It's fine.
She does not. And moving on to the next deleted scene, which is Ron and Harry storming out of the Gryffindor common room after the argument between Harry and Seamus about the Daily Prophet saying that Harry's a liar and all that kind of stuff. And it's a really quick little scene, but I like it because I like Neville scenes and I like scenes that show the emotion. It's Neville telling everyone else in the common room that his gran says that the Prophet is what's rubbish and they're going to cancel their subscription.
Yeah.
Which I think is a nice little sentimental moment.
And also it's kind of very, if you'll allow it, cinema verite, and there's this kind of handheld camera move, very artistic, very real, very gritty, and then you've just got Neville looking, kind of preempting his, like, you know, final form, tough Neville slaying snake, you know, version, where he's kind of got this thunderous look, and he's like, my gran, blah, 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 blah. Foreshadowing. Good stuff.
Yeah, it's a good early sign of Neville stepping up to the plate.
Mm-hmm. Bad call, director.
Curse you, David Yates.
Neville stands, unite.
So the next scene is another shot of the Gryffindor common room, but this is everyone just kind of hanging out. You've got Neville tending to his plant. You have some random couple just making out in a little doorway.
I really liked this scene. So I don't know, because I'm not that familiar with the movies, I don't know how much of this stuff they put in the final form, but the awkward snogging in the background, the kind of, at some point you hear like some wizarding, I want to say like new metal playing in the background. Mm-hmm. You know, it shows that they're ahead of their time because this is supposed to be like the mid-90s or something.
It is, but the movies never did a really good job of making it actually feel like it was the 90s. They kind of just went for vague modernish time in the movies without really putting a stamp on it.
Well, they could always just argue that the wizards were the ones who invented new metal and kind of the way, like, so I live in Belgium. Belgium kind of gets things like 5 years after everyone else. And so maybe the muggles didn't get new metal until, you know, the early 2000s, whereas the Wizarding World had been enjoying it for 5+ years at that point.
Are you Belgian or are you... what's your story?
My classic Belgian accent, as you can hear. So my dad's British and my mom's Irish, and I lived here when I was a kid and now I'm back. So that's kind of the short version, yeah.
I've been to Brussels once. I did all the classic touristy things. I went to the big metal ball.
Oh yeah, the Atomium.
I went to that, and then I went to Mannequin Piss. And then I drank Elysium beer and I ate some good food. And then I made my way on to the Netherlands. That was my day.
Basically, I mean, I will say it gets mixed reviews, Brussels, very, very mixed. So I'm glad you had a good time because I've had some like interesting reactions. My favorite one was this Korean person who told me, she was like, oh yeah, I did a tour and I had like 2 days in Paris and 1 day in Brussels. And I wish I'd had 3 days in Paris.
Oh.
And I was like, that's succinct. But, you know, I don't hate it. Like, good for you. Honesty.
Thankfully, when I lived in Oakland, my roommate was Belgian. It was for a work thing. I was going to Paris for a 6-month thing and I was going to travel. And I was like, oh, should I go to Brussels? And he was like, yes, but for 1 day. Because after 1 day, you will have done everything.
Yeah.
And I think that was good advice. Like, I had a great day, but I felt incredibly accomplished in all of the things that I did and drank and ate. And then I made my way on. And I think if I had stayed a second day, I would have been like, no, I did it.
Yeah, no, you made the right call, definitely.
Anyway, Brussels, great country. Right. When people can travel again in a year, go.
Oh, yeah.
I just called Brussels a country. Tight. Look at me. I'm so good at geography.
Oh, yeah.
This movie did do a pretty good job of showing just the kids being kids. I think not as good of a job in the third when Alfonso Cuarón stepped in and was like, we need to show that these teenagers are really teenagers. But there's still a couple scenes of them just hanging around and being students.
Was that the point where they also started to wear muggle clothes? Was that number 3?
Yes, that was Kieran's big thing.
A mistake, in my opinion. But
the muggle clothes?
I think they should have stayed in robes, to be honest.
I do too.
I think you've mentioned this before. I think it makes for kind of plot disruptions later on, right?
Yes.
When the wizards are supposed to like not know how to be muggles.
Right.
Maybe the youth, they've like found out how the muggles dress and I don't know. Anyway.
For wizards, since there is no technology, young wizards understand clothes and muggle things. That's being cool. That's their version of knowing how to add a contact to your iPhone.
Yeah.
I know what a zip-up hoodie is. I'm Harry Potter.
Yeah.
But the rest of the scene, after you see the couple making out, you see Seamus running a game of cards with Dean, which I think is very fun. And then it ends with Harry looking dramatically and somberly at the fire. And then that's the end of the scene. So nothing crucial, but it's a nice tone setter.
It was, yeah. And very amicable. Makes the place seem very cozy. I like it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the next scene is another Trelawney moment. It is a extended cut of the divination class where they're talking about dream interpretation and then Umbridge comes in. This scene is pretty well intact in the movie. This one just kind of expands on it a little bit. So you have a little bit more of the class in the beginning. You have a little more of Trelawney being upset. And then you have one scene of Parvathy being sad that Umbridge is being mean to Trelawney since it's her favorite professor. And that's all this scene really is. Like, I think it makes sense that they trimmed it out, but I kind of like the additional emotion behind what Trelawney is going through since she, in the book at least, takes it really rough when she gets kicked out and removed.
Yeah, I wasn't sure like how much of this was kept into the other movie because I would assume that this is quite crucial.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't this lead to her being fired?
Yeah, so in the movie it's like the middle chunk is intact. It's just the beginning and the end that I think is kind of trimmed in this deleted scene. So not too big of a loss here.
Yeah, I love Imelda Staunton. I was talking about this with a friend earlier. she kind of isn't quite evil enough. I don't know how you feel about this, what the consensus is on this, but I don't know. I reckon she could be more evil.
Right. I think part of the charm, not necessarily the charm, but part of what I enjoy about Umbridge is that she's not so over the top evil, but it's just the incredible misuse of power and the self-confidence that she's doing the right thing. Mm. And I think that the actress does a pretty good job of it. But I think what they do wrong in the movie is that towards the end in the book, when they have the whole scene between Harry and Hermione and they're bringing her to the centaurs in the forest, I think that you lose her big evil reveal, because I think that's a big moment where in the book she goes full evil and unhinged and reveals that she sent the Dementors at Harry, which is something that doesn't happen in the movie. And one of the deleted scenes we're going to talk about is her being more freaked out. So I think that the movie towards the end didn't make her look like straight up evil enough, because I thought that was a fun reveal. In the book, she slowly loses her cool. And once you have the scene where the Dumbledore's army is caught, I feel like that moment leads to unhinged Mm-hmm. Umbridge, and that I think is lost in the film.
Yeah, but you know what? There might be some sort of thing where most of the Americans watching might not be familiar with the actors who are performing in the Harry Potter movies.
Whereas let me tell you, I don't know, because in these movie episodes, I'm like, is this person famous? And then the entirety of the United Kingdom is like, you fucking idiot.
Exactly, this like, it's just the stuff for the famous national actor treasures. Of all time. And so I think you, like, British viewers might have, like, a different relationship, because, like, I love Imelda Staunton.
Yes, I know she's very well accomplished. That's the general vibe that I do know, is that I assume all of the adult actors are incredibly accomplished and have done a lot of other things.
I mean, you'll just have seen them in bonnets on the BBC, kind of bustling about, you know, somewhere in some period drama, and you'll be like, oh, that's kind of like my aunt.
I think it would be really cool. I always appreciate when there is an actor that I know pretty well that is in a role that you don't anticipate it. Like when Tom Cruise was in Tropic Thunder, like, what?
Yeah.
This doesn't make any sense. So I think it would be fun if I knew these actors better. And sorry that I'm not well versed in Shakespearean theater stage performances to know that Gilderoy Lockhart is like a big fucking deal.
This is the thing. I would say my main point of interest in the Harry Potter movies is spotting all like the national treasures popping up in different roles and getting to just go absolutely ham and camp it up and just like really enjoy themselves, probably for the biggest like paycheck of their lives. It's great.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Their residuals are probably great. I mean, David Tennant goes in, is a snake man for a whole movie, and gets that bread.
There we go.
So the next scene we have is Filch and Umbridge just after Fred and George leave in their dramatic firework explosion. And I thought this scene was really funny. It's the two of them standing outside of the Great Hall looking very upset. And Umbridge's hair is smoking like it's on fire. And Filch tries to blow it out.
Yeah.
And then Umbridge doesn't let him touch it. Also, a key note that my wife pointed out when we were watching it is that her hands are fully extended the whole time. Like her fingers are fully spread out the whole time, which is just
She's
a good
mad.
Moment to make her look uncomfortable. I loved this little scene.
This is like a classic, I would say, Looney Tunes trope, which I would call Singed and Furious, where something happens off screen. Usually there's like a loud crash, and the next time you see the character, they are charred, singed, like smoking likely, and just absolutely furious. And this is like a complete like straight played version of this trope. It's brilliant. Love it.
Singed and Furious is my favorite Fast and Furious spin-off movie franchise.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah, that is the perfect way to describe the scene. I'm very sad that it wasn't in the movie. It's hilarious.
Yeah, it should be. Yeah.
It's like 10 seconds long. What are we doing? What time are we saving?
Yeah. Well,
make the zoom in on the Warner Brothers logo 10% faster and we can keep the scene in. The slow zooms in the movies where they go through the Warner Brothers logo takes 12 minutes. So I think you can put this scene in if you just speed that up a little bit.
Right. Yeah, completely. Also, nice that, you know, Filch has a practical use in this scene. You know, it's blowing some singed hair.
For the woman that he loves, you know?
Yeah,
and the movie's making a point to make him obsessed with her, so why not keep it in?
Yeah. A nice moment.
It is. So the next scene is what we were alluding to. It's an extended Umbridge monologue in the forest with Harry and Hermione.
Right.
And I liked this. I was sad that it didn't go all the way the way the book does, because I don't believe the movie, and this deleted scene doesn't do it either, I don't think they ever reveal that Umbridge is the one who sent the Dementors after Harry over the summer, is a big reveal in the book.
Crucial.
And I think, yeah, I would agree. It's crucial. It's very important. But in this extended monologue, she talks about there is chaos in the school and she was just trying to keep order. She goes on to talk about she has to tie up loose ends, and in order to do so, sometimes the ends justify the means for the greater good. And it looks like she's about to do an unforgivable curse of sorts. It looks like she's gonna say crucio, and then just before she's about to do it, the scene cuts, which I would assume, in if this scene was to be used in the movie, would be her getting attacked or cutting to the centaurs or something else.
In the actual movie, do we see the centaurs? Because that's like expensive CGI stuff. They might have just cut away.
Yes, we do see the centaurs. They go in and they just kind of carry her away, similar to the way in the book where it's ominous and you're like, what are they going to do with her? And you really know.
Yeah.
So that is done well in the movies.
Yeah. I would say I feel bad for the actors, like, that. What are they, like, 15, 14 at this point? Whenever they have to react to someone monologuing at them, because I feel it does them no favors. They're just kind of staring, looking a bit tense. But ultimately, they don't have a lot to do here, and it doesn't show them in their best light, I would say.
I would see how that makes sense, though, because when in your life has someone ever monologued at you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, why? I mean, I guess she's pointing a wand at them, but you're not really sure why they're just standing there looking pissed.
It's the facial equivalent of, I don't know what to do with my hands.
Yeah. Oh, that's another thing. Like, we'll see it later. But I really wish that some production person had given, like, the kids something to hold in a lot of their scenes. Mm. There's a lot of kind of locked arms by their sides,
which
I sympathize. Like, I would not know what to do with my arms if I was being filmed. I really wish some person had been like, look, let's just give them an apple. Let's give them a book.
Well, they all have wands.
They have wands.
I feel like if I was in the Harry Potter universe, I would be constantly fidgeting with my wand.
Just setting things on fire and then putting them out and setting them on fire.
Even just like trying to get good at twisting it between my fingers like a drummer does with drumsticks.
Completely.
I would just do something with it. Maybe I'm just a naturally fidgety person, but even as I record this podcast, I am playing with the drawstring on my sweatpants.
Oh, yeah. No, I have not let go of my hair this entire time we've been recording. I have just been twirling it. Yeah. No, exactly. Give them something to fidget with. But, well, yeah.
If it was modern, they could have all had fidget spinners if the movies took place in just the year 2016.
Yeah, but... Yeah, or just like phones. Like, everybody's just got a phone in their hand now, and it's such like a useful prop because it's like everything and nothing is in your phone.
This is another great moment. If the movies actually were like the 90s, they could have all been playing with silly putty or slap bracelets or those like gummy hands that stick to walls.
Yeah, I feel like the 90s in America was such a specific kind of era for those little like gimmicky toys that I just have no idea about. I don't think I had a slap bracelet.
Oh,
I don't remember. I
think
we had different
Pogs,
toys in Europe.
The finger traps.
Right.
So many good things. Playing Jacob's Ladder with string in between your fingers.
Okay, yeah, that one we did. Yeah.
The little fortune teller things that you put in between your fingers, and it was like, say a color, blue, B-L-U-E. Say a number, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and then pull it up. It's like, you're going to get pooped on in class.
Yeah, no, that one made it to Europe. We got that one.
Your crush is going to hate you.
Yeah.
So yeah, keep this scene in. Anyway. we need more
evil
Umbridge.
Wrong call, directors, yet again.
So this next scene is Harry going into Dumbledore's office. I think this would be after the ministry thing and after Sirius died, because he looks kind of beat up. And I do have a note here for these videos, which I realized there's this sad guitar that plays in the background, which happened earlier in one of the first four movie deleted scenes. And I was like, that's interesting that they have a sad guitar. This is definitely just in this YouTube video. Every now and then they swap out music, I guess, to avoid a copyright claim. So this sad guitar, which makes its way into maybe three or four more scenes in this YouTube video, is not from the Harry Potter score.
I mean, I was baffled. I was like, this feels like something between what you'd play over a sad scene in the OC and maybe something in Twin Peaks. It's great, though, like a big mood. Definitely.
Yes. So don't worry, viewer at home. This is not in the Harry Potter universe. This
is
whoever uploaded this YouTube video decided to do this. But the sad guitar could fit. It's Harry just looking sad. I think it's fine that they didn't include this tiny scene, because in the book, you have the big scene where Harry is really upset and then he destroys everything in Dumbledore's office out of anger.
Oh.
And if you're not going to go full stop into that scene, I don't think you need to go half measure into a tiny scene of Harry looking sad for 6 seconds. Like, it doesn't really accomplish anything.
So does he not smash everything up in the film?
Not in the movies.
Hmm.
Which is, I think, the biggest mistake of the entire film.
That's a key character moment.
Yeah. I mean, I guess maybe the prop department was like, we really don't want Daniel Radcliffe to have to destroy. We don't want to have to make 12 clocks for him to break.
Yeah, and then magically repair. Yeah. That's true. But this was like the rage book, no? Like,
yes.
Book 5 is like angry Harry.
Right. Post-traumatic stress. Mm. He's got some stuff going on, so justifiably angry, but yes, still very angry. Caps lock Harry.
Yeah. Caps lock Harry, yeah. Okay, interesting. I will say that in a lot of these deleted scenes, I see why they were cut out, because it's kind of Daniel Radcliffe staring into space for a while, and then often someone coming up behind him and going, Harry, and then the scene ends. So those ones, I see why they cut all of those out, but yeah.
So the final deleted scene from this movie is Ron and Harry talking as Harry packs to go home. And Ron says, hey, the feast is going on. Do you want to go down? Harry says that he's not in the mood. Ron goes, oh yeah, me too. I'm not hungry either, which is a blatant lie because Ron is always hungry.
Always hungry.
And then Harry says, no, go on ahead. I think this is a really sweet moment because Ron, canonically, is always hungry gets very upset when he can't get food. And I think this is a great friendship moment. And it's just continuing the theme of all of these deleted scenes that show why Harry and Ron are good friends. They all just get deleted.
Yeah. And a great bad lying, I would say, from the actor there, from Rupert Grint. Great, like, a sweet scene, definitely. Mm-hmm.
And the bad lying is such a teenage thing.
A bit of a low-key moment from Ron, which he doesn't get many in the films, from what I can see. Mm-hmm. He's generally kind of like, his face is going in like 7 different directions at once, and he's just doing the most. So it's nice to have a moment where he's a bit more dialed down.
Yeah, I think it was a really good showing of Rupert Grint's acting chops, because after this he goes down the stairs and sees Hermione and she looks at him hopefully, and he kind of has to give a somber shake of the head note that he's not coming. I thought it was really great. I'm sad I wasn't in there.
Yeah, definitely.
But that is it for Order of the Phoenix, so now we move on to Half-Blood Prince. Oh, past Mike, we will be making our way to the deleted scenes from Half-Blood Prince, but much like someone watching these movies in real time when they actually came out, you have to wait a little bit before you can go on to the next one. What's the cause of this break? It's Wingardium Adriosa! Today's episode of Potterless is brought to you by Tab for a Cause. I'm just going to get right to it. Tab for a Cause is a fantastic Google Chrome extension that helps you raise money for charity just by opening tabs on the internet, which I do very often. I'm sure you do as well, and I'm sure you're doing even more in these times. The reason I really wanted to talk about Tab for a Cause this episode is because currently they are doing an initiative to raise charity for COVID-19 relief, so it's the perfect time to join. All you got to do is go to tabforacause.org/potterless, all written out, tabforacause.org/potterless. And after that, you just do a couple clicks, install the Google Chrome extension, and you start opening tabs, and you can donate your hearts. You get one heart every time you open a tab. You can donate those to charity and raise money. So far at this point in time, they have raised $878,326.46, which is pretty fantastic. I just thought it was a great time to talk about them on the show because they are contributing to the Solidarity Fund. So far, 18.2 million hearts have been donated, which is fantastic. I'm giving all of my hearts to this cause, and you can too. And it's so, so simple. So if you want to help in a really easy way, you can if you go to tabforacause.org/potterless. Today. And now you'll hear words from a few sponsors who make it feasible for me to be a full-time podcaster. Some of these ads will be read by me, others of them won't. The ones that aren't are inserted locally, so if you live internationally, don't be surprised if you hear an ad in your country's native language. And once those ads are complete, we'll get back to this episode of Potterless. So now we move on to Half-Blood Prince. And the first deleted scene is Harry and Hermione talking about Draco not looking well.
Oh, yes.
And then also that he's spending time around a vanishing cabinet. So just extra context to them being suspicious of Draco. And there's another deleted scene from this movie of them talking further about Draco's suspicions. And as a whole, I'm upset that these scenes were deleted because I think that was a really key part of the sixth book, is them constantly wondering what's going on with Draco. And in the movie, you lose the suspicion. You just continually have scenes of Draco being suspect, but not the squad being suspicious of it.
Right, I see. Yeah. I mean, it's also like one of the things that I think makes the movies a bit blunter than the books is that you actually have to have people say out loud, isn't it suspicious what Draco is up to? Without, whereas in the book, they can be a little bit more subtle about it.
The lack of narrator can come back to bite the movies quite often.
Oh, yeah. That was something else I was thinking about. When I was watching the Trelawney scene, I remembered that in the book, it often mentioned that she smells like cooked sherry or cooking sherry. Do you remember that? Uh-huh. And I remember as a child thinking, what is, it sounds delicious, whatever cooking, I had no idea what it was. Kind of like, you know, in The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, when you don't know what Turkish Delight is, but it sounds amazing. And
and then you have a Turkish Delight and you realize they're actually garbage.
And now I'm like, I guess cooking sherry, I'm still not 100% what it is, but it's probably not great.
I would assume sherry is wine, right? Like it's a sweet wine. And then cooking sherry is, I guess, when you cook with wine.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know exactly, but sherry is like a very, like it's somewhere between a wine and a spirit.
Ah.
So it would be very strong.
Just in case, I will turn to our UK correspondent, Dottie James, who helps me out when I have British quandaries, and we haven't had her on an episode in a while. So I'll shoehorn this in. So we'll see if Dottie has anything to say about cooking sherry.
And now it is time for British quandaries with UK correspondent, Dottie James.
Cooking sherry is absolutely a real thing, although some of the characters in the book use it as a pure drink. It is commonly used as an ingredient as it has extra salt added to give it a longer shelf life.
This has been British Quandaries with UK correspondent Dottie James.
Thank you, Dottie, for this wonderful knowledge that we now have.
Thanks. But also impressive that seeing as the narration is like, kind of from like Harry's point of view, that he knows how to identify cooking sherry.
Yeah, maybe Petunia was really big on using cooking sherry.
I was thinking, yeah, exactly. He's got gaps in his knowledge, but, you know, knowledge of like cooking with alcohol, not one of them. Thanks, Petunia.
So the next deleted scene is Hermione chiding Harry for messing up the Slughorn interrogation so royally. There is a great back and forth where she says, quote, "Honestly, Harry, sometimes I think the Daily Prophet should call you the Dim One." Harry just goes, "Nice." I thought was so good.
It's great. Hermione doesn't get many moments like that. So a like precious like thing. Also, Dim is an excellent insult that isn't really like, it's so specific, and also it's not super harsh.
Right.
But it's also very insulting. It's a great word. Dim is also, you know, like there's the UK word thick.
Yes.
Also like stupid, which is a great word. I love the American meaning of thick too. That's also a great.
Thick,
you know,
with two C's.
With two C's.
Yes.
Also a great word. But thick with a CK meaning not bright is a brilliant descriptor. I love it. And dim equally. Great.
In my quarantine days, I have been watching a lot of those British panel shows, Taskmaster and Big Fat Quiz of the Year.
Yeah.
And the words that people throw at each other as insults, I am so envious.
Yeah.
Like calling people daft, calling people dim.
Yeah, daft is a great
like
one. Yeah.
Saying that people are like faffing about. Gosh, I love it.
Yeah, but no, I liked that a lot, the dim, call it the dim one. That's a great joke.
Mm-hmm. And this is something that I've made a point often. I don't think that the movies make the kids British enough. There's not enough times where they say British slang and say things like, oh, come off it, or bloody hell, or all these other classic Britishisms. I don't know if it was intentional that they try to either Americanize or just non-Britishize the kids, but I think they could have played more into them being from England.
Well, speaking as someone who has written a book, Bloodlust and Bonnets, available now, which is set in England but sold to an American market, I was put under not a lot of pressure, but basically I did have a lot of feedback from kind of the editors, like well-meaning, being like, oh, this specific word, I don't think American audiences will get it. And I had to kind of push back and be like, I think they'll put it together. I think they'll like it if I can't remember what it was, but if I put a word like dim in, I think they'll put it together that it means not clever, you know.
We're thick, but we're not that thick.
Exactly. And so I reckon because this was made for an international market, they probably did have some things of like, you can't have them saying, I don't know, some specific Is squabbling, like, is that an English word?
We don't say it, but we can understand
it. Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Like, squabbling. Yeah,
usually context clues. Yeah. You read the tone, you use the context of how it's used in a sentence, and you can put it together. I had a math teacher who was British in high school who said, you need to stop faffing about. And I didn't know what that meant, but I gathered he meant stop fucking around.
It probably wasn't good. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, the way he is saying this, he wants me to stop doing a thing. I am goofing off in class. I would assume he is telling me to stop goofing off in class.
Yeah, no, I agree. It only adds to the charm when you have local stuff in. So yeah, I think it should lean more that way.
Mm-hmm. So the scene continues and Hermione says to Harry that it's going to be harder now for Harry to get the information out of Slughorn. And then you get some more Malfoy stuff where as Hermione is leaving, Harry says that he thinks Malfoy is up to something and leaving the castle because when he looks at the Marauders map, sometimes Malfoy disappears. And Hermione says that's impossible. No one can leave the castle these days, so the map is wrong. And Harry goes, the map is never wrong. And then Hermione kind of sassily turns and looks at him disapprovingly. And then she goes, good night, Harry. And it's definitely 7 o'clock at night based on where the sun is in this scene. So yeah. Hermione is being a big nerd and going to bed at 7. It is sunset.
They've given her a prop, though. Thanks for that, guys. She's holding a book. Looks more natural, especially compared to the very next scene where she's outside and they all are walking with no objects in their hands and they all look a bit awkward.
All the kids should have had backpacks. Yeah, backpacks just give them are in the books canonically. Why do none of the kids have backpacks?
Yeah, it's true. Do they not?
No, they just kind of carry their books to class. I think. But they also don't have lockers. So where are they? Do they have to store all of their books in just a big pile in the common room?
Just
or
like
in their dorms?
Endless summoning charms. Just books flying through the castle at all times, like knocking people off their feet. This is a big obsession with mine in the comics, where every time that there's a summoning charm done, presumably that object is just like hurtling through space and taking out little first years, you know, knocking them downstairs and stuff like that.
Oh, it's so true. Maybe that's why Harry's always late to classes, because he always has to go back to his dorm room to get his books because he doesn't have a locker.
Yeah, or he's just been smacked in the face by a giant, you know, early fantasy book.
Sorry, I was unconscious in the hallway. Yes, someone's okay. Giant textbook hit me in the back of the head.
The corridors are just littered with the bodies of students. I mean, that's kind of part of the course in Hogwarts anyway.
I mean, yeah, they would be like, oh, another kid died.
Another
we
one
can't
down.
Shut down the school just yet. 10 people have to die.
He'll be fine.
Yeah. So the next deleted scene is Harry talking to the squad again about Malfoy's suspicions. He says that he realizes that Malfoy disappearing could instead be him going to the Room of Requirement. And this is a realization that was actually made in the books, so I am upset that it did not make its way into the film. But Ron goes on to clarify that his dad told him that the vanishing cabinet at Borgin and Burks is still there. So then they're trying to wonder, oh, wait, what's going on? Harry says, what if there's two? And then the scene ends because Harry is going to meet up with Dumbledore. I think this is before they go into the cave. Mm. And then Ron says, good luck, mate. And Harry says, I don't need luck. I'll be with Dumbledore. This scene is incredible. It has it all. Malfoy suspicions, more context to the vanishing cabinet situation, and then one of the best lines in the book of, I don't need luck, I'll be with Dumbledore.
Which is then mirrored in a later scene, which they also cut.
I know. Why would they delete some of the cutest quotes? They're so good.
Yeah. I'm surprised that, so none of this made it in.
No. I don't think so. I am almost positive that the I don't need luck, I'll be with Dumbledore quote did not make it in, and they definitely don't really talk about Malfoy and the vanishing cabinet stuff. The movies just only show Malfoy doing it and not any sort of outside suspicion of it.
To be fair, that's what happens in the books. They don't put it together.
No, but they at least wonder about it. Like, they at least recognize that Malfoy is being
suspicious
and
stuff. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's at least a conversation.
Yeah. I mean, the Marauders map also, I mean, we don't know if it's infallible. You're just kind of assuming that, Harry. I mean, how does he know that that thing is right? He doesn't.
My dad made it, so it can't be wrong.
My dad and his best friends. But also, it's just supremely creepy. The Marauders map is astonishing. Like, yep. Invasive, terrible, surveillance state. Bad, bad, bad.
Mm-hmm. Not a good look from the Marauders.
A good guy with a crazy surveillance technology. is the only way you defeat a bad guy with crazy surveillance technology.
The next scene is inside of the cave, and it's Dumbledore giving the backstory of the whole Voldemort tortured people in this cave scene, which ultimately I think is fine to leave out from the movie, but it is nice to see that they did try to figure a way to put that in, because I do think that's a nice touch for the books. I don't think it's essential for the movies, but it is good to know that this cave has, it's not just a random cave. This is a cave where Voldemort did some shit to some kids that we won't speak of.
Yeah. Also, you know, Gambon's time is running out, so it's nice to have a little bit extra of him.
Right. And speaking of, the next scene is when Harry and Dumbledore are on their way out of the cave. Harry says, "Come on, Professor, we're almost there." And then Dumbledore says to Harry, "I'm not worried, Harry. I'm with you," which is one of my favorite lines. And the mirroring is so good. Why would you take this out?
Iconic line in the book. Mm-hmm. I am a terrible cynic and have been since, you know, I was born. And so I think 16-year-old me or 15-year-old me read it and thought like, nah, that's really cheesy. But still, iconic line. Surprised that they didn't want to include it, especially seeing as cheese doesn't seem to have put them off in other places.
Not at all. Not at all. So very confusing for me. Mm. I don't get it. So the next scene is a montage of people sadly looking at the sky.
Oh, yeah.
Which I guess could perhaps be when the Death Eaters do the big dark mark.
That's what I was assuming.
But no one is standing together and Draco's in a hospital bed. I was very confused at the context of this deleted scene.
One for the fans of background characters, Flitwick runs the school choir. That's quite nice.
Yes, they do show that in the third movie.
Oh, do they?
They show that. But there was in this deleted scene an extra cut of Flitwick doing choir practice.
I love it when they show the little extracurriculars and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I'm a fan.
But the choir, not in the books.
Exactly.
It's just a movie thing.
Of course there'd be a choir. It's a public school.
Yes, you as the resident champion of background characters, I also need to make sure we get this on the recording because you said you appreciate Ludo Bagman and that he's such a big feature in Potterless.
Yes.
Which makes me very happy.
I'm so pleased to discover that Ludo Bagman, his you know, his influence extends. I think he's a great character and probably my number one peripheral. I don't know if you call him peripheral, but my number one, what was it? Unnecessary Harry Potter character.
Yeah. I mean, he's a fun red herring. I fell for him so incredibly badly. And that's what has made him a joke in the podcast. I was beyond convinced he was the bad guy in the fourth book.
Oh, did you?
Just turned
that's
out
really
to be a red herring. But I think it was a good writing by JK. I fell for it.
A great writing and a great example of JK Rowling's talents in world building. I would say that like an unnecessary kind of tertiary or, you know, less than tertiary character is not only like so like fun and you want to know more about him, but he actually does influence the plot a little bit by tipping his hand to help Harry and everything like that.
Right. Just a little bit. Just suspicious enough to fly into my radar.
Yeah.
And me go head over heels thinking that he was guilty.
Interesting. Yeah. Bagman hive, definitely.
So the next deleted scene is Harry approaching the common room where everybody else is, and Ginny looks at him very sadly. It's a big zoom in on her face, and that's pretty much all that happens. I think it's fine that we cut this scene. I don't think it accomplishes much except for Ginny looking sad, which is a theme throughout this movie.
Yeah, a lot of another 10-second shot of Daniel Radcliffe staring into the mid-distance.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can see why you cut it. We've got enough of them in the bank, I would say.
Exactly. And then the final deleted scene is Hermione talking with Harry about them going with him while he searches for Horcruxes and stuff. And Harry turns to her and says, "When I'm around, keep the snogging to a minimum." And she goes, "Yeah, like that's going to happen. Plus, he's barking." Is this a Britishism that you are familiar
great.
With?
Yeah, bark. Barking is short for barking mad, which means like crazy, but which I didn't really understand why she said that. I was like, well, there seems to be like a bit of a, maybe she just panicked and she was like, no, I don't like him.
I think that's what it is. She's trying to pretend crazy. That she doesn't like him, but Harry sees through it.
Yeah. Barking mad. Yeah.
And then Harry goes on to say, "Funny, he says the same thing about you." And Hermione says, "Yes, but I'm exceptionally perceptive." And then Harry says, "You're brilliant. You're both brilliant." And then it shows the scenic background. I think this is really nice. I think this would be a better ending.
Yeah.
I think it's a better ending than they do in the movie, because in the movie, they try to give this unnecessarily happy ending that feels disingenuine. I think this is the movie where Harry says like, "Oh, I never realized how beautiful it is up here." And they just try to give you some bullshit sappy ending where I like that this is more conversational and appears to be more genuine of like, huh, you have a crush on her friend. No, yeah. I don't. Ah, we're teenagers. Like, this is how we're trying to avoid talking about more serious matters. I think that's a more natural conversation to have than Harry being like, it's really pretty.
And again, the you're brilliant, you're both brilliant. It's low key and it's touching and it's very sweet. You know, it's not like overly soppy, but it's, I don't know, it's a recognition. I love it.
It's the correct level of sap for Harry to show to his friends that he appreciates having around.
Yeah. And difference between movie Harry and book Harry, I would say maybe, I don't know, book Harry would be like this in touch with his emotions.
No, I think movie Harry's a little bit more
of a softie.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's all the deleted scenes for movie 6. But Emily, we have the wonderful problem of we've talked too much and had too much fun. I thought this was going to be just one episode, but we just had so many good goofs and bits that we're going to cut this early here. And next week we'll pick up with deleted scenes for movies 7 and 8. But thank you so much for joining on. If people want to find you on the internet, where can they do so?
So I'm at Emily's Cartoons everywhere, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. And I also have a Patreon where you can subscribe for $1 a month and you get an extra comic a week if you really like my comics.
That's fantastic. They're very good. I can vouch. Check them out on Instagram. And if you want to check them out, get bonus ones on Patreon too. So Emily, thank you so much for joining. Listeners, thank you so much for listening. And as they say in the wizarding world of Harry Potter, before they look off into the distance like Daniel Radcliffe does so often in these films and in these deleted scenes, wizard on!
Thanks, Mike. Bye.
Hey, if you find yourself with some newfound free time and you want to listen to some new content while you're doing whatever, Multitude is here for you. There's so many other great podcasts from Multitude. I'm quite partial to Horse, the basketball podcast that I help run with Eric Silver. We talk about all the silly elements of the NBA. So recently we talked about a very funny tweet that Joel Embiid sent out. And we also talk about NBA history, but the silly NBA history, such as an NBA coach's car getting sent flying through the air by a private plane. Yes, that actually happened. Join the Party has its new season going. Spirits has great mythological stories, but also their live show segments are so fun where they do creepy or cool. I highly recommend those. And Head Heart Gut is as funny as ever on the Multicrew, and there might be some new stuff coming to the Multicrew soon if you join, so you can learn about all of these new shows at multitude.productions. Potterless is created by Mick Schubert. It is hosted by Mick Schubert. It is edited by Mick Schubert. It is produced by Mick Schubert, as well as Vicky Garcia, Aaron Johnson, Klaus Erlopu, Marchismo, Samantha Rose, Juan Sanfilio, Rosemary Dajmarie, Lisa C. Keen, Romina Rivadeneira, Audra Eleanor Curlin, Nikita Power, Ali Madsen, Amelia Krauss, Sarah Nink, Ben Silver, Rachel Guthrie, Zachary Pulido, Orchid Grower, Vivian the Owl, Haley Hastings, Moster, Alex Consulver, John Kotker, Noel Beausoleil, Liz Bigelow, Brendan Pickens, Claire Spencer, Rory Collier, Veronica Bartova, Lotta Bartova, Noah, Tracy Toya, Colleen, Jennifer Marklew, Frida J. Svensson, Ivor Peterson, Summer Rathel, Andrea Kroc, Justin Montero, Jacob Parrish, Maya Gray, Mark Boddy, Polly Burge, Zena Rosnowski, Harlan Haskins, Noelia, Addie, Nikki Harris, Kine, Amanda Alford, Alicia McLaren, Kafir Shaltiel, Sarah Shedder, Marta Morrison, Eileen Gazesh, Keegan Curran, Mr. Folk, Maya Flor Sake, Siri Scarsfjord, Georgia Davis, Skyla Lily, Adele Ryan, Professor Threat, Ellie Hoskovchova, Elizabeth Christofferson, Michael David Yordi, Tiffany Cottrell, Kelly Otilio, Carrie Crumpler, Connie Bienkowski, Jen Wendt, Nedry OS, Will Huser, Samantha Lentz, Aurora Fruhoff, Marco Cepeda, Courtney Marie Rieger, Ashton Gabrielson, Brittany Gutierrez, Phelan, Julie Walton, The Meadows Family, Ginny from the Block, Brianna Jordan, McKenna Tweedy, Heather Langille, Brad Harding, Thomas Chavara, Brianna Cusumano, Kevin Stewart, Laurie McDonald, Chrissy Tew, Jarls Fiven, Haley Logan, Ashley Enstrom, Peter McGrath, Sophie Duda, Janin Rose Daub, Nicole Linzer, Callahan Anderes, Kylo the Husky, Leah Reed, Melissa Rabb, Bella Barlack, Melanie Demi, Bill Gill, Victoria Colca Perry, Elizabeth Yu, Britt McLean, Becca Spry, Rhys Diggenen, Adam Graham, Joseph Torp, Lily's Mom, T Run Money, Madison Kyle, Don't Call Me in Fedora, GK Have It Your Way, Sabrina Balsiger, Sophia Loves Pigs, Farzan Gerabat, Melanie Duhreif, David Douglas, Maria Matt Barger, Okamahime, Yimki Bony Pony, Jacob Rossitano, Kelsey Gillespie, Taco Blowfish, Rike Mangor Jensen, Taylor Payne, Rochelle Mobbs, Megan Moon, Alicia Chapman, Riley Kittis, Colleen Waters, Stinda Vachter, Laurel Happy, Rossanne Batamana, Erica Butler, Miranda Hurley, Natanya Page, Char Char Binks, Yogan Shanley, Darcy Alexandra Harrison, Elite Raves, Steamed Nuggets, and Can't I Potter? Web design by Kelly Schubert, and the music is by Bettina Campomanes. If you want to find us on social media, you can at facebook.com/potterless, twitter.com/potterlesspod, instagram.com/potterlesspodcast, and reddit.com/r/potterless. For any and all information about the show, you can go to potterlesspodcast.com. For merchandise, you can get just the exclusive merch over at patreon.com/potterless, and that's also where the bonus episodes live. If you want to tell someone about the show, whether it's online through a review or safely in person or through an email or a messenger app or something so that you're keeping your distance, that would really help a ton. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time, as they say in the wizarding world of Harry Potter, wizard on!